Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to our new podcast, Boots, Balls, and Bras, part of the Acast Creator Network. I'm here with Farah Williams, Eartha Pond, and I'm Beck Smith. Join us each week where we're going to bring you the best insight from all the biggest talking points in the women's game globally, sparking genuine debate. Trust me, there will be some debate around key topics within our game. And we're also going to probably share some stories with you and some experiences throughout the season. And we're definitely going to be joined by some special guests. Right. So Farah Williams probably needs no introduction, but I think you should anyway, just because it probably makes you feel a bit uncomfortable. And that's what we're about, right, Eartha?
Let's do it.
I'm Farah Williams, ex-professional footballer, played for several clubs. I won't name them all.
What was your favourite club, though?
Do you know what? They were all good for different reasons.
Very PC.
Learn a lot from different values from each club I was at under different managers and cultures of the club. England's record cap holder, 172
Way.
Caps.
Drop the mic.
Okay, and you're done.
And now, a retired footballer, I'm a BBC pundit in the WSL, so exciting.
Nice.
See where my future takes me. My journey stays within the game, though.
Yeah.
And now, we're doing this.
Yes.
Able to talk about football on whatever level we want to, which is what I've always wanted to do. Mm. I've wanted to not be dictated by people and, you know, just talk about the game, how we see it, or not even just the game. I think things outside the game that we can talk to, have an opinion, and no one's going to dictate us. So this is why I chose you guys.
Yeah, yo. All right. Well, there's a little bit of a podcast. Eartha Pond also really needs no introduction, but let's do it anyway.
Yeah, Eartha Pond, Farrah's teammate, played women's football, similar to Farrah, across, I guess, the pyramid from top to bottom.
When did you start?
At the age of 9, so
kind of late, right?
Yeah, kind of late, and yeah. I guess I just fell into it, but I think we'll get onto that at that point. But yeah, played across the women's game, but always done stuff outside of it, so I'm also an elected counsellor.
Do you have a medal or something?
I might maybe try and go for mayor at some point.
Nice.
So we're going to need some votes from the podcast, so to be continued.
Which city?
London. Well, Westminster. Okay. That's home, so if I ever get to do one, it most probably be at home.
Nice one.
Run a charity for young people, ESP Foundation. So we work with young people in education, sports and policy, and it's really just the three areas that I've done most of my work in. And then education, just always learning. So I've been quite blessed through the game to learn loads of things through different clubs and meeting different people and being around different tables. And yeah, how can I make sure that football is a game for all across society? So that's my aim.
So just like really small goals.
Just small goals.
Eartha don't set nothing small.
just getting things done.
You need to see Eartha's bedroom, right? No joke. She has like a wall that's like painted black, you know, like so you can do the chalk on it.
Oh.
And she has like, you know, like you do to your do bubbles. This. No. To do this, she's got too many to do this. She has like a bubble and it's like, whatever. There's one that's got a house because obviously she's going to get her own house eventually. Mm. And, you know, off of that, she's got how she's going to achieve her goals. And they're just like, it's just unbelievable to just like sit in her bedroom and go, Eartha, like, where are you at now? Okay, she's near to tick that project off. That one's ticked off. That one's going well. And then she just builds on how she's going
to
improve it. It's
We're
amazing.
We're going to have to see a picture of that.
Powerful woman, man. She's a powerful
big
woman.
Big spider diagram.
Honestly, yeah, crazy.
Do you have a picture of it?
I do have a picture of it.
All right, we'll get that out.
I'll show it.
We'll have a check.
Yeah. So cool.
That's rad.
And Bex.
Wait, first of all.
Onto you. You need to introduce yourself now.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, but can we talk about how you have one of the best names on the planet?
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Eartha.
How did I get there?
Yeah, can we?
Well.
Would you mind? Your mom sounds like a riot as well.
It's really like 70s, 80s herbal medicine.
Perfect.
She's not perfect.
Free birth allowed me to have the beautiful name of Eartha Sweetie Pond. So ESP Foundation as well. So it works with that. That's education, awesome. Sports and policy. And I'm kind of a bit kind of fickle with trying to get things, even numbers, things rhyming. So,
hence boots, balls, and bras. Hey.
Alliteration.
Alliteration. Or as we say in America, alliteration. Yeah.
For sure.
Nice now one. It's your turn, Bex. Yes. Introduce yourself. How long we got?
Yeah.
Because she's big out here. Yeah.
International,
yes. I was born in LA to Kiwi parents, which meant that we grew up in multiple countries. Fell into football too, actually. Never wanted to be a professional footballer. Did want to be a professional surfer. My mom said, absolutely not. You're not traveling around the world, like from beach to beach, without getting an education. So did that, got an education, and then got picked to captain the New Zealand team when I was in my senior year of college. And then that was my professional career, captain New Zealand through a couple World Cups and Olympics, played against this.
Got her shirt, guys.
Oh, wow. As in you were pulling it or as no, in
both.
You spotted
both.
It?
Both. Yeah. Both. Okay. I pulled it that much on the pitch, I might as well took it after.
Yeah, exactly. She just like finished the tackle by saying, I'm going to take this that actually for real after amazing. The game. we played against each other, didn't we, in mm-hmm. the GB Olympic or the London Olympics, opening game even. Mm-hmm. And then I worked at FIFA, organized Women's World Cups, then started a production company with my sister, who's 27,000 times cooler than me. And then what did I do? Went to Copenhagen, needed some stuff with brands and football media. You guys sleeping yet?
No, keep going.
Just keep going. I worked with some brands on getting more investment into the game, like from the brand side and working on strategy. And then I started my own company a couple of years ago called Crux Sports.
Amazing.
Which has been fun.
Smashing it.
Yeah.
Felt like I should have elaborated on what like I'm doing other than just playing. And
do it.
No, I forgot. No, at the beginning. Not. I was put under pressure.
You have 20.
All these homeless charities, you know, football charities.
Go on, tell us about your homeless charities, please.
No, we need to.
No,
I'm just saying it's obviously something that's been a big part of like my life, and then obviously like wanting to give back and getting involved within the football. Well, I originally got involved with the Liverpool homeless charity that then led to the England homeless charity, which then led to Centrepoint and representing and being an ambassador there. So
nice.
Something that, I continue to do.
Why did you do that? Why did you want to get involved with the homeless charities?
Just because I was homeless once upon a time.
Yeah.
So I just thought it. You know what? It was actually something that Rachel Brown was asked to do, and she obviously knew at the time that I was homeless or I had been, and she directed them and said somebody would be more suited for that role, and kind of like, and we got involved that way.
I love that. Cool. Don't you love that? I love that about the women's game.
I think just in terms of that lived experience is really, really important, because there's a lot of time we can assume like something needs to be a certain way, but actually on the ground you don't really know what it's like. So I think Farah being involved in that is really important, and to see it from a lens where she can communicate both, I guess, physically and verbally in terms of being in that situation and what it might feel like and what they might need outside of, I guess, the normal things that you'd think about. So hats off to Farah.
Absolutely.
Hats off to all three of us.
I forgot to mention my FA role. I think that might be.
I was just about to say,
speaking
of like understanding things from the lens that you need to understand it from, you sit on the FA board.
Yeah, I guess for me, it was really just about there's so many things where you can kind of complain and say, oh, this was done so wrong, and you can kind of get chewed up inside. And I think for me, it was about how do I share that experience so that actually nobody else has to face those barriers? Because maybe it might be just people being naive, but actually how can we make sure that there's other spaces within football that are kind of not left behind? So I thought it'd be better to be part of the solution
rather than
just putting up the barriers and saying, oh, you're not doing this, or you are doing, actually, have you thought about this and how can we work together? Because I think a lot of the time, because obviously the game's been going for quite a while, even though it was banned for 50 years, we can get used to using the same people because they just keep doing the same thing and it ticks a box.
No, we're starting to get there, man.
We already said this. You know what? We already said this. Some of the work that's being done has been like work that has been spoken about previously. Yeah. And what they do, and we say it all the time and we laugh, it's like you're getting an old car and putting a new number plate on it. And that's what they do. And they just give it bigger, better words than what was said 50 years ago, 30, 40 years ago.
Do you know what the difference
is? And so that's
is?
What's frustrating. All of these new initiatives have always been there that people have spoken about, but no one's actually gone and really drove those initiatives out there.
And I find the biggest difference between that, what we've all been trying to champion for 20 years and now, is the investment. They just never put any resources behind it, but now they do.
But I think just quickly on that investment piece as well, I think it's really important that the sort of organisations and the partners that they had 20 years ago who had those ideas, sometimes they're still using them, but actually they're not relevant in those communities nowadays. So I think that bit's really important to reassess actually how impactful are they in the communities you're trying to reach now? And actually, could we use a maybe smaller, newer organization, but actually have insights and access to what we're trying to do? So,
yeah, and it's a good point. Because this podcast is going to be touching on global topics, it's also looking at the different markets. So what happens, what works really well in the US, for example, which we've spoken about quite a lot, haven't we? The university system. And is that necessarily what would be the best for different countries? But anyway, more topics to come, because I feel like we can talk about all the things. But I really want to get into the Euros, the women's Euros. Last summer, because...
What, champions? So, go on.
Champs.
Farah, how does it make you feel that England won?
Unbelievable.
As a former lioness.
Yeah. Unbelievable. A moment that I think, you know, all of the women's game has been waiting for so long. Yeah, it was pure elation. I think, you know, Erfel, you were pitch side with me, and we saw, and you know what, I've got some great images and videos that,
yes,
that without Erfel being
who
there, that
camera,
yeah, you were, shout out.
Yeah, but without Erfel, all the videos came from.
That raw kind of emotion around, yeah, you know, really being, as I said, super happy with what the girls have achieved. You know, I saw so many players and managers that have been in the game for so long with tears, and it's tears of joy, but for me, there's never no tears where there's joy,
yeah,
because there's nothing to be sad about. So I wasn't somebody that was crying because I was, you know, so happy about what had happened. I showed mine for you through smiles, laughter. Yeah,
that is so not me, man. I'm
not a crier. So I'm like, what am I? I'm crying when I'm sad.
I like it.
There's nothing to be sad
it.
About. We finally won a major tournament, yep, that, you know, so many before me had tried. During my time, we'd tried and, you know, didn't
the
quite
whole
make
world
it.
Tries, really. That's
yeah, they do, but for
playing,
England,
right?
When you've been in it for so long and got so close, you know, finals and four semifinals previously.
Isn't that nuts? How many of those four semifinals have you played in?
Three. And so, yeah, you just miss out. I mean, and the final that we got absolutely battered by the Germans. So it was so nice to finally beat the Germans, you know, at Wembley the way that we did.
Yeah. Do you think it was deserved, Eartha?
I think a lot of things fell in England's favour. But actually, they were prepared. I think, like, they'd done all that they could done off of the pitch, on the pitch. And, yeah, I think they deserve to win at the end of the day. And we came back with a trophy and we're going to hold on to it for as long as possible. But, yeah, I think the girls done really, really well. The squad, I think it was the best squad we could have put out. I think maybe potentially one, potentially somebody else could have gone in. But outside of that, I think Serena got it spot on.
Yeah.
They,
I think
it.
The performance, don't get me wrong, in the final, I think, like, for long periods, Germany dominated England, and we expected that. And I think, you know, certainly pop for Germany would have made a difference to their team and to what how that final might have looked. But England, for the first time, managed the game and an occasion better than an England team I've played
I
in
know.
Or watched
That's
before. And that was what
side.
Was so impressive about that group of players that won that game, because, you know, if you go on chances created, if you go on shots on goal and possession, I actually thought Germany probably, you know, was on top of that for more often than not throughout the game. But as I say, the way that, and for a young team to manage it the way that they did was impressive.
Yeah, it was.
I think for the first time, like we were saying when we was watching the games, like, players were allowed to play. And I think that's the difference in terms of, like, worrying about tactics and how someone else wants me to play and am I actually, like, we're the ones on the pitch now. We've got to work it out. We've got to find the solutions. Yes, we've been given the tools and the resources to do that, but actually it's down to us. And I think for them to do that at Wembley, at home, like, the whole country was, like, just wanted it to happen, especially what happened with the men previously. Like, it
was a lot of pressure.
A year later as well, a year after the men losing, you know, in the final.
In the same stadium.
You know what excited me the most, though? Keira Walsh is somebody that I knew from young. I remember when I used to work for the FA in the skills program, and I identified this kid, and I was like going to Mo. I was like, Everton at the time, Mo, we need to sign this kid. She's
this
unbelievable.
Is
Mo Marley.
Marley, who's
Everton.
The
She's now England
coach, too,
under 23. Yeah. I'm like, we need to sign this kid. She's unbelievable. She used to come, just her and her, I think it was her best mate, because there was only two girls in Rochdale. We used to have this, like, talent centre for an hour. It was on a Wednesday, and she used to come and, honestly, we need to get her. And Mo's philosophy was, if they want to play for Everton, they'll come and play for Everton, type thing. I'm not chasing anybody. It was like, so she ends up going to Blackburn and then to Man City and on from there. But she's always been so good in that Manchester City team. And then you go to England, and for some reason, at international, they kind of change the way that you play. And I get that. But we say it about the men, don't we? Why can they play so well for the club? They go into an international environment and they lose a little bit about them.
Or vice
what
versa
you saw, yeah,
happens,
and what you
too,
saw so, from Kira in that World Cup is the Kira that we know that can play, plays forward.
Yeah.
Never, you know, she rarely played. In the Euros, she rarely played backwards, which I was so used to her doing for England,
exactly.
Not for Manchester City, but for England. And the passes that she played and chances that she created,
it was amazing.
Throughout that Euros
and nonchalant,
unbelievable. So we saw the very best of her in that Euros, and it was exciting.
Always
yeah,
Kira
Walsh.
Yeah.
So exactly, and she was playing forward all of the time. Doing passes that only she could see on the pitch.
Yep.
Seeing movements before they were even made.
So good.
And it was just exciting that actually Serena or herself, she maybe took it upon herself or Serena give her that safe environment to be able to play the way we know she can play.
Any other highlights from the Euros? What do you think?
For me, it was definitely the coverage. I think for people to finally see women's football on a world stage.
What was that? BBC smashed it, did you say?
That's BBC smashed it. But also just in terms of like, not just being not having access to go into the grounds, but actually in houses, people are having that conversation. And when we talk about, and let's not disregard the Norway game, because people just think, another women's football game. Actually, to understand how good Norway is on a normal day,
good.
And actually England turning up and everything just clicking was amazing. But also just to inspire girls that actually this is a real career. Because like when I started playing football, my dream was to play for Man United behind Ryan Giggs.
I thought
I was going to be the first person. I'm like, I'm going to be the first woman to ever play in the men's game behind
Ryan.
And I was adamant. Like that was going to happen.
She was adamant.
And actually for girls to know that this is a real career path. I can really do this if I really want to kind of put my time and energy into it and that's where I can get to. But also in terms of that's just the beginning. So we've just hit that ceiling and actually it's going to get better because more investment, more time, parents are going to believe actually my daughter could be a professional so I might let her go to that session. But also making sure that there is that vehicle for girls to go into is really, really important
as well.
So I think just the coverage, the access, that was the thing that I was pleased about.
Actually, Caroline Weir said the same thing to me when I interviewed her once. She said, I was just going to play with the guys. It was not a thing. I was just going to do it. Why not? I really like the fact, too, that the quality of the production of the football was so good. The number of cameras, you know, the amount of pundits, the variety of punditry, the commentary. It was a huge team. It was the first time I'd seen a production that big. And I think that makes a big difference too. Because if you, for example, when I was working at FIFA, they had like over 30 cameras for the Men's World Cup. And then the next year rolls around and there's 16 cameras that they're planning for the women's. It's like, well, clearly the product's going to look completely different if you don't have super slow-mo cams and helicopter shots and the spider cam. It looks different, right?
100%.
So I really like that as well.
And I think there was the last figures around 23 million.
Yeah, mad.
Watch BBC. And that's 23 million in terms of
watch
TV
what?
Sets.
BBC.
Yeah, coverage.
Of the final?
Of
the full tournament.
Of the full tournament. But also looking at it in terms of actually in a house, there's not just going to be one person.
Yeah.
So if you kind of duplicate that in terms of households of like two or three.
Well, your
or
house
four,
anyway.
Or my house as well.
How big is your household?
That's what she's getting
one,
on it.
I'm one of eight. So literally, like that's what I'm trying to say in terms of
the cousins, the brothers, the aunties.
Yeah,
it's just
one house.
Like, else that's in the house.
Family, innit? So we've got our own squad. Like anyone want to play our team, please send in your family teams. We'll organise a match. We'll get it going.
I like this.
Just play on. But yeah. That's what I mean in terms of actually the wider spread of that one screen, the impact it has, but also making sure that I think in terms of like the Olympics, there was a lot of legacy work that was done once it was over.
London 2012.
2012.
Yeah.
But with this, we actually 2 years before even the ball was kicked, we were putting in plans for crowds, whether we'd won or not. Yes, we wanted to medal, but we wanted to make sure if there was an opportunity to go through that.
I think even with BBC and Sky showing the women's WSL, you know, that year building into the Euros, perfect timing, you know, giving the viewers an opportunity to see, because it weren't just England players in the WSL.
Absolutely.
There were so many players from, you know, Europe that played in the tournament. So, you know, for the games that England weren't playing, there were fans of clubs, teams going to watch their players that, for example, represented Arsenal or whoever it might have been, Chelsea, and they'd go and watch those girls. So,
and I'm glad you brought up the FAWSL, the league here in England, because the whole point is every time in women's football, we get this major peak and then everybody just sort of dies off. And the WSL now has already shown actually really nice numbers in the first weekends, hasn't it? We had over 40,000, 47,000 Arsenal versus Spurs in the Emirates Stadium, and it looks like it's only going to get stronger and stronger. Obviously, not every game can be played in the men's because they, you know, it's further international breaks, but the WSL crowds are looking pretty good already, which is great. But legacy from the women's Euros as the last point.
Just legacy in terms of there's a space for us. And I think from an elite level, like you said, transitioning into that domestic league, not just in the WSL, in the Championship, and even further down the pyramid, like, people are attending games. It's not just someone walking their dog and a few family members that are coming. Actually, people want to see their local...
People walking their dog and just like, a stadium.
Isn't it? When we used to play, literally, someone just walking their racer dog is just like literally walking around the pitch. But literally now, as you said, as it becomes more professional... People want to be involved with the game more. It's about that whole pyramid, because what we don't want to do is the top two leagues to just hop away and then the rest are left so far behind. And then when you have great competitions such as the FA Cup, they get drawn and then it's like 25-0 because the gap is that big. So that bit's really, really important.
And I think during the Euros, and one more point that we just wanted to mention was that there are other qualifiers going on for the Women's World Cup, which is obviously next year in New Zealand and some other country I think they're sharing it with. Can't remember what it
is. I don't know. You bring Bex's any tickets, let me know. I'm coming with you on that trip, literally. Can we do a recce?
We could definitely do a live show from there. It's a good idea. But yeah, so there are a lot of teams that qualified and then still obviously some that are qualifying still. But moving forward, the USA won the CONCACAF championship. So title holders for that continent versus title holders of the Women's Euros this Friday. What do we think?
I mean, it's a great matchup. You think, what, 2 hours after going on sale, they sold out the Wembley Stadium for that game? You know, so I think obviously... off the back of the Euros, in terms of the fan base and people really invested in this Lioness team, it shows that it's there. I'm not sure where the US team are at. They're still going through a bit of a transition. Mm-hmm. New players still trying to find their way within the squad. But it's a great, you know, mark of where England are at. You know, I mean, they've showed where they're at in terms of winning the Euros and, you know, facing some of the best opposition out there. But they're ranked number one in the world, USA. And
for a reason.
Exactly that. And they're consistent with that. And, you know, I think we're ranked fourth in the world now. So it's a good test, you know, a measure of where this England team are at. And we're unbeaten, man. So we're going
to be
unbeaten. So I don't see us losing on Friday.
Really?
I don't see us losing to USA. And I don't know what Serena's brought to this England team, but I just don't see them losing games. I really don't, and it's frightening. Like they're frightening at the minute. They just have this like aura about them, don't they?
I think if they lose, it's because they haven't turned up, not because someone else was really good and dominated them. I think definitely.
So they're good enough.
You know what's nice about this England? Like for years, we played for England. Everyone we played against was in fear of. Although you try and have that confidence,
like New Zealand,
we play the Germans, and it's like you know, you've got to go into the media, and you're like, you're talking like, we can beat them. Like we never believed it.
Yeah.
Now I feel like teams feel like that when they face England. How are we going to beat this England team? Because they're that good at the minute.
Is that because actually, if you look at their domestic league, they play against some of the best players in the world. So they're like, but I play against them all the time. So if that's their national team and that's their best player, then we can definitely beat these players.
That's what I think it is. You're right, because obviously we never had international players within our league, you know, within Europe or whatever.
Five,
so we never had that when we played. So we was always... You're only ever going off what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously these players get really hyped and all of a sudden you're a bit like intimidated by their profile in that they've been given. So you go into like a game against the US and you hear about Abby Wombat and it's like, wow, her profile's unbelievable. Yeah. And you're like, you're frightened by that or you're in fear of it a little bit. You know, you have confidence in you, but you're like, do they know about you? So you're kind of like in your head having that battle already. Whereas weekly now, our English players are playing against some of the best players in Europe for their national team. So they come and they train alongside that. So they know strengths and weaknesses of that. Mm. They get used to playing against that. And so when they go into international environment, they're more confident with that.
And so just to add that, does that add in terms of the confidence in terms of their squad as a whole as well? Because if you bring it back in terms of we didn't have those international players back in the day and we was playing internally, if you could then got into that squad and you think, actually, I should be playing ahead of that player, maybe that's where the kind of boundaries in terms of cultures thinking, why am I not playing and that player's playing? I play against them every single week and I might, do you know what I mean? So actually, in terms of the culture of the squad, it wasn't strong because they had that internal domestic.
Didn't have enough external competition.
And then now we've got the internationals in and they're thinking, actually, as well as that, I know I'm better because we play against them and that's their star player. So there's so many different things that sort of add to it. It's not just one thing, as well as good coaching, as well as, as you said, the culture in the team.
But what do you think about the US culture? Because that's always something that coming from the US and like having that sort of drilled into me, also obviously playing with the New Zealand team, completely different. Like couldn't actually get any different from the New Zealand versus the US mentality. But is the US mentality still something that you guys think is feared? Because I personally, having grown up there, I think it is, there's just a championship mentality. 100%. Like, I am not losing this game.
100%.
Like, you pull up your socks, you know, it doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. I personally am not losing this game, but also we as a unit are not losing this game. And I don't see that. I saw that glimpses in the Spain game. It was the first time, you're right, that there was a mental shift. But I don't see it with any other national teams.
It's
right
a
now.
Natural default, though, isn't it, in terms of the US? As in, we are the
world
best
champions.
Ever.
And not, you still feel that now?
But not even as a team. Good I think question. Individually, they're driven. Maybe not together, but individually. Like, I know, like, in college and stuff, like, we have to be the greatest that we are. And if there's someone better than me, then I need to be, like, and there's no ceiling to it. And in terms of the talent pool, it is so wide big. That they're like, I have to do, I don't know, I've already beat the bleep test, but I have to be able to do it twice in a row. Like, it's something ridiculous where they're trying to do things that have never, ever been done to make sure that they're just at the top. And if someone else goes above, they want to be better, even if they know they're great.
I do get that mentality with them. And they've always had that, even in moments where they're half transitioning. But I'm not sure, since they've lost the likes of Khalid, all of these big players that they've transitioned and have retired. I'm not sure this new pool of players that have come in have that same mentality as the Americans have had from throughout my whole career in terms of playing against the US. I don't feel it. I don't feel they're empowered. I don't feel that.
Do you know what's so interesting?
I don't know why. And I remember hearing, you know, you read on Twitter and people have a dig at Carly Lloyd for like really trying to get that out of the new group of players. Guys, leave it where we left it. You know, continue that. Wanting them to continue that same mentality. And if players like that are seeing a shift and are quite open in speaking about it, then what we're seeing on the eye must be right, no?
But in terms of that highest level, I think for that crop of players, like, they had to work so hard, and it's like infinity is the top. For these players, it's like, as long as I'm the top in fitness and as long as I'm like what that number is, for them, they're doing the best in the current game. Where these other girls were like, the best is unthinkable. You can't even think of like breaking a 2-hour marathon yourself. Like, they're like, yeah, we can do it in 1 hour, whereas Amazon are thinking, nah, like, 2 hours is definitely good enough, that's even exceptional, so I'm good to be exceptional. Rather, the others are like, what's better than exceptional? Like, I remember hearing stories like that, they do fitness tests until they vomit. They're not stopping until they're throwing physically.
Dude, that was my whole college career.
Others are like, okay, I just need to get the high score. This is what the board said. Once I've done that, I can do it and I do my best.
Or stay
but
on
why
the pitch.
Why would I go until I need a defibrillator? It doesn't make sense.
We used to have like trash cans.
Never.
On the side of the
Never.
Of
who's
the pitch.
Making himself sick from right now? I'm stopping.
But on the topic of players, Alex Morgan just got Golden Boot of NWSL, so still at the top of her game.
Yeah.
Megan Rapinoe.
She hasn't been picked, no?
I don't know, actually.
I didn't see her in the squad.
I don't think Morgan's been picked.
We'll check.
They're trying to, the coach is trying to obviously transition and trying to get rid of those players.
The dependency on those players too, probably. Yeah. But Megan Rapinoe, she's still one of the top players on the planet.
But even when you are still the top player, it's frustrating. Like, they must be frustrated by it when they don't get selected, when they still know that they can play a part. And obviously she does. And she doesn't start regularly now for the US, but it's still a major player within
the squad.
Are you
guys going to be there at Wembley?
I am.
Friday?
I'm a local. I live local. I'm local. Yeah, so that's the only thing. Like, I hate there's loads of traffic and there's like loads of people in my area. But outside of that, it's
but
cool.
But you know how
they've
to
actually
get into
invited,
the
haven't they? They've invited all the ex-former Lionesses. Yeah, to go
have
pitch
they?
Ahead.
So, yeah, every single last
every
one.
Every lioness that's
get
been
out.
A part
yeah.
of, yeah, that's put
that's
the English shirt on has been invited
that
with a plus one
cool.
to the game. So, yeah, I think they're going to go
is
around
that the first
pitch.
Time
first
they've
time.
Ever done that, isn't yeah. it? And you were saying
I didn't
previously.
Get one, but I only was a lioness on FIFA. Just when I played it, but I didn't get one.
Yeah.
Still getting invited.
No, so I think
so
that,
good.
I think that's
you're in the youth squads, weren't no. you?
I think that's long overdue, though. I think, you know, certainly for some of the players, one that I played with in my early stage of being a lioness, but even before that, they paved the way for all of us yeah. and for this generation now. So the fact they're getting recognised by the FA in, you know, straight after the Euros in a massive game against the USA, a sellout Wembley,
so good.
Walk around the pitch, I think that they deserve that appreciation from the fans. So I think it's a nice gesture from the FA to do that.
And I think awesome. And I think it's important sometimes, not necessarily when you've done something wrong, but when it hasn't been right, that you kind of be transparent and say, there was no reason, we just didn't get it right.
Mm.
Instead of actually trying to skim around and say, oh, but maybe, no, like, you just didn't yeah. go right. We're trying to make it better. And this is a mm-hmm. start in terms of moving forward. And I think that level of appreciation is really, really important.
Also very important to have people like you who are former players who have come through the systems from the grassroots to be in those positions mm-hmm. of decision-making power so that you can give them a different perspective that they might not even think about.
Yeah. And just, I guess, from an inside knowledge, even if we hadn't won the Euros, this is something that's kind of been in the pipeline anyway.
Yeah.
That was always going to
nice
happen
one.
At some point.
Nice one.
Because it just needed to happen. But yeah, it's a cherry on top in terms of we won the Euros and the next game and playing against the US. So.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah.
So in the first game match day of the Spanish league, the referees striked. They didn't show up for the games and the players had to go to the games because otherwise they would have had to take the 0 points, had to forfeit. I thought that was really interesting. And I spoke to a Spanish referee from UEFA a couple of weeks ago and asked her all about it. And she said that actually they now do have centralized professional contracts. So what happened was the Spanish league went into a professional league for the players, but the referees were just not thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, you know, talking about the sport is not just players. It's we have to talk about referees. We have to talk about coaches. We have to talk about. So that was interesting. And then the second match day or third match day, all of a sudden half of the 15 of the Spanish players decided to withdraw their spots from the Spanish national team. Mm. Thoughts on that?
Some of the international teams I'm thinking are saying, whoopee, because they don't have, when they have to play them in terms of upcoming fixtures. But it's always sad to not see players playing. So I think, again, that dialogue, there's obviously been a breakdown in terms of communication. So that has to be their number one priority because we want players to play. We want all the best players to be competing. So what do we need to do to get to that solution?
The thing is, players don't get to this point, and I know people talk about player power and all that, but they don't get to this point where they're, I don't even know what you want to call it, protesting against whether it be the manager, the association, if they genuinely don't feel powerful about something that's happening within that environment. So for 15 of them, and you know, to write this open letter about their national team, something's not right. We won't know that, and the Spanish coach has been stubborn about it and picked a lot of the 23 squad for their next camp. But something needs to be done because, as Erfa says, you want to see these the best players on the best stages all the time. But yeah, it's a powerful thing to do. And for them all to do it, it says something's not right. That's what I'm reading it in between the lines. Is that because I know as a player, look, there's times where you know you have to stick together on something, but unless you feel strongly about whatever it is that's going on, you don't do it. You don't just do it. You know,
you wouldn't risk your spot on a national team.
Exactly, and not many people do that. Yeah. So the fact that they've all done that, they must feel strongly about whatever it is they're protesting for.
And I think it was what they were protesting about was the removal of Jorge Vilda, and speaking to someone from the Spanish
reasons league. Being though, because you know, for me, I also find that player power where you want to just remove a coach for the sake of removing a coach. Mm. For me, I don't buy that as a player. Well, you know, so there has to be better reasons than they just don't like the coach, for me, because otherwise that's a silly reason to not want to play for your national team because I don't like the coach.
Well, Jorge Vilda has come up through the under 20, so he used to manage them because I remember dealing with him through under 20 World Cups. And I think he's been on that squad for a while. And there was a lot of conversation during the Women's Euros about the players that he was picking in terms of politics rather than, you know, that one striker that came on.
Okay, so that's completely different.
So that was part of it. I think that, you know, player selection was a bit biased. And I don't know if there's other things that may come out later, but it was verbal and mental and physical, like abusive that they were saying. And then his father is one of the top guys at the Spanish FA. And so, you know, basically when they wrote this letter, he then came back and said, you need to apologize for your opinions and we can maybe forgive you and we can move on. And since then, Jenny Hermoso, who was out injured, obviously didn't play in the Women's Euros, has come out and said that she, you know, written a very long statement on her Instagram saying that she really wants to find a solution, but didn't sound like she was leaving the team. So, you know, as one of the top players, do you stay together? Do you, you know?
I guess, as I said, we don't really know the backstory to it. But if it's like they're a poor coach and we don't like their systems and we don't like what they're doing, that's not really for players to dictate.
Exactly.
That's for the national governing body to say, we've employed you and actually you're not reaching our targets and we're going to sack you. But outside of that, you've got to turn up.
And it's a results-based industry anyway, football. Mm. And they lost to England. And they probably, if you look at that game, and those of you that watched it would have said they were unlucky not to have won that game because they dominated large periods. And yes, it was and you could look at the manager because it was something that I said, you know, his decision-making within that game cost them the game, I believe. So, but only losing one game, they dominate so many games in a national team. It's hard for a governing body, as Erfa says, or an FA or whatever, to sack him because they win so many games.
Just to clarify, it was the verbal and
inside camp, the abuse inside. So that's different. Yeah. So, of course, they have to look at
least that's what they're
for player well-being, they have to look at that. Mental health, yes, for sure.
I hear your point. Because I think players are getting more and more power and control now. So you're right. There's that like element of what the NWSL players were constantly saying, hey, these guys are actually sexually abusive, verbally abusive. You need to listen to us versus, you know what, I'm not getting enough playing time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting one. Do you guys think that the WSL is the best league right now?
It's probably over the duration of the season, I would say it's the most competitive.
We've certainly got
a lot more foreign players coming in the lower teams as well, not just inside the top four teams within the league. So obviously it makes it stronger because there's certainly not a large enough pool of great English youth players at the minute to make the league strong. So the fact that, you know, the likes of West Ham got, you know, foreign players, there's European players within the whole of the league, which is good. But I still see a gulf in class between the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea. I mean, Man City and United are close to that, but then the rest are just, there's a gulf in class between those teams. And we've seen that at the end. You know what's interesting now about the WSL? So if you'd have asked me this last year, I actually thought we were probably the most competitive. Now off the back of the Euros, these sell out crowds, right? So for international players, so you look at the so you think of that Arsenal game at the Emirates, and actually Tottenham, you know, you've heard the manager there talk about, you know, we're challenging for top four now. We've invested in our players and whatever else. They're miles behind Arsenal. They went and played in front of 47,000 and they absolutely froze. So their players aren't used to being exposed, performing in front of those type of crowds. The Arsenal players thrive off that. Beth Mead thrives off that. Mm-hmm. Miedema thrive. Kim Little, I mean, she was phenomenal in that game.
Yeah, but is that the structure of the league? So in terms of individual teams have work that they need to do in terms of their club football, but actually the sort of pipelines, the organisation, the promo, like everything the else that comes with it, the marketing. Broadcast. I think in terms of WSL, like no one can touch us consistently. But in terms of what teams do on the pitch, that has to be down to the club and the club's own business.
It is. But these bigger crowds are certainly suiting the bigger teams than they are the smaller teams because they're not used to it. It's scary. Yeah. It's frightening. I remember the first time I ever walked. I mean, 2005 Euros, I was dreaming of, here playing in front of an unbelievable crowd. And we went out of Man City and, in the warm-up, there was no one in there, hardly. We come out for the game, it was full. I froze. I remember thinking, what is going on? I couldn't hear anybody. So my sounds went. Everything about my performance just went. I mean, we won that game because Kazkani's won the goal in the 93rd minute, right? But I can't even, and I remember most of the games I played in. Damn. I can't even tell you, other than Kazkani's winner, because I was like, I'm so glad you won that for us because that was so bad.
I can't
tell you what happened in that 90 minutes.
But didn't they prepare you for that? Didn't they say
I've never played in front of a crowd. I played in front of a man and his dog. We were talking about it.
No, but in terms of...
I was unprepared.
From an England point of view, didn't they say it's going to be busy, there's going to be loads of people not going to be able to hear something?
I had people calling me saying they were on the motorway and the service stations were full.
Oh my God.
They didn't prepare me. Okay, I'm great. I can't wait. I can't wait. And then I walked out. God help me. I don't even know what happened to me that day. I can't remember the performance. I just know that we won. And the only goal I remember was Kaz's winner. That's all I remember from that game.
So from top to bottom.
So it's difficult now with all these crowds. We want that. But at the same time, it's going to take time for the smaller teams with it. And I'm saying the smaller teams. Teams that haven't played or ain't got the internationals that have been exposed to crowds like that before. Get used to playing in front and performing in front of those type of crowds.
And I think the full package of the league is certainly better for player recruitment because when I was playing, it was Germany, maybe Sweden, then Germany, and England was like not even something you'd consider. And now because of the names of the brands of the teams, because of the marketing, everything around it, the broadcast, global broadcast, obviously the UEFA Women's Champions League, that going viral and on YouTube globally as well, doesn't hurt. But certainly helps for players to want to come to the league as well.
100%. I don't think in terms of, as you said, that long-term consistency over the whole season, it has to be WSL.
Yeah.
Like there's so much that it brings, as you said, like that international flavour. I guess Champions League is the next thing when you look at the top teams. Mm. Like how can they break through that consistently and how can they be challenging for that? But outside of that, it's the domestic league, there's quite a few teams who's in and around it. They can all take points off each other on a bad day or a good day.
But we've seen it already, haven't we?
Exactly.
We have seen it.
First week. Yeah, definitely. Like,
Daly's back.
I don't know if people...
You know what's going to be interesting about this? Because, as you say, Rachel Daly, the opening game for Villa against Manchester City, in terms of her goals, in terms of the way she pressed, in everything she did as a number nine, which is what she played out in the US... compared to what she plays for the Lioness as a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
Ellen White retiring.
She's going up, man.
Russo injured.
Yep.
Are we going to see a Rach Daly in a number nine and maybe 100%. Challenging for that number nine spot now? Or are we going to see a Lauren James who, for me, would be best suited for that number nine spot right now?
Mm. Interesting.
But might freeze underneath the light.
She won't freeze. she's been performing the best for Chelsea this season. She's been phenomenal.
Yeah, it's nice to see the young players.
But sold out Wembley, as you said, it's a whole different ball game, right? When you get onto that, will someone like that thrive? Because I think young players just kind of...
Yeah, but Alicia Russo and Ella Toon, young players who really were playing for Man United. That was...
But Russo's come from America, so she's like... True. I'm the greatest. She's got that mentality and she put me on there and I'm going to back heel it. I'm not just going to shoot forward. Like she's got that.
You're right. That was maybe some of the American flavor.
100%.
Just quickly on Women's Champions League. Did we see the groups that they have drawn in the last days?
Arsenal facing Lyon at some point.
There we go.
PSG and Chelsea's group.
Do you guys want to see these?
Yeah.
Do you know
them? Every time I see that draw of Arsenal Lyon, I remember when I was at Arsenal, we played Lyon in the Champions League, and Rosanna rainbow flicked Jane Ludlow in the middle of the pit. I'll never ever forget it. And literally, Yanks was like, "I'd walk off."
Rachel Yankee.
She was like, "I'd walk." There's no way. Like literally, they were just phenomenal. It was just a whole different level. Yeah. So, hopefully they're going to be competing. It's
We need them too. We need them too. It's great that Arsenal actually beat Ajax away as well, and there were some complications there with sizes of goal and everything.
Gosh, goalposts.
Goalposts, so yeah, crazy.
Yeah, concussion, substitutions and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've got Arsenal's playing Lyon, Juventus and Zurich, and Chelsea's got PSG, Real Madrid and Villaznia.
It's a tough group. PSG and Real Madrid, they've got a tough group, Chelsea, but
Wolfsburg, my alma mater, has probably, I think, the easiest. Roma, Praha and St. Poulton. Mm. Do we even
Bayern
know where
Munich
all those
with,
teams
are from? Stanway.
Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Rosengård and Benfica. Mm. Who do you think is going to win it this year?
You can't
It is, Lyon, right? Barcelona. You've got to,
I'll go Barcelona.
Wolfsburg?
It's a, Bayern are looking good, though. Bayern look good at the minute.
Bayern looks good. But
you know what's better? That they're all of those teams in the Champions League want to win it. Yeah. So all of the top two teams within all the domestic leagues, they want to win it. They're really pushing and they're getting players that like are making their squad that little bit stronger that are pulling them away from everybody else. So,
but Matty and Walsh, game's
over,
forget it,
it's done. So they're even goal scorers, so yeah, it's exciting, right?
The service is ridiculous. It's crazy. Like, unless they have a
really bad
game.
They don't even
need
a back line, do they? They can just sort of like dish everything from there, front to back.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And Barca, I've been watching them as well. Like in some of their play, they're a little bit more direct because they've got Assis Ashuala as well. So they have that outlet sometimes. So where we're so used to seeing them tiki-taka, they do that. But also, if you've been watching the game, that long ball, they've been looking at it. So which is what I think if they want to really compete, because we saw against Lyon, they got physically outdone by them early on when Lyon got all over them. So I think that outball for them is something that if they add to their game, could be frightening.
Predictions for Friday.
An England win.
Yeah, but how much? I mean, apparently 3-1. You're very good at these predictions.
I was going to say 3-1. I'm going 2-1 then. I was going to say 3-1.
I was going to say 2-1 then. I thought not 2-1, I'll do 3-1.
Okay, I'm going to go 2-1.
3-1 3-1 to England. 2-1 England. 2-1 England from Farah.
But if it's 2-1, then I said 2-1 and Farah said 3-1.
And if it's 3-1, I said 3-1, but I give it
back. Okay, I'm totally confused. I have no idea what you guys just said. I'm going to go 2-1 USA.
What? Get out of this room right now. Gosh.
I mean,
you're born in LA.
I think
look
we
at
might
this.
Have to wrap up this podcast for the day. Thank you guys for listening to Boots, Balls and Bras. We might have to explain the title a little bit next time, but we would like to hear your thoughts on our title, on the podcast. What topics you guys want us to chat about, because it is important for us to hear from you. And we will maybe catch you on Friday at the game. Till next week. Bye.
Laters.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.